Happy Monday, Liberty Kitty Cats, and welcome back to the flagship Lions of Liberty podcast. And before we get into today's very fun episode with a couple fellow California libertarians, that's right, we are a real thing. I want to tell you about a little something we're doing to start off the new year the right way, because it's not just a new year, it's a new decade, or some claim it's not. Some say it's 2021, but we're just rolling with it because it's the Roaring Twenties. Once again, remember the Roaring Twenties? Most of you probably don't. But we're going to make this decade, the 2020s, into the Roaring Twenties, because we're going to be roaring for liberty. And to celebrate that, we're going to be giving away a brand new t-shirt design, our Lions of Liberty Roaring Twenties new t-shirt, which you can find at our store at lionsofliberty.store. But how do I get one for free, Mark? You might be asking. And if that's the case, well, I am here to provide the answer. And that is by joining the Lions of Liberty Pride, by supporting us on Patreon, which funds this entire show, sends us to the LNC, where we're going to be there doing video interviews, creating a little mini documentary, and will help us grow even bigger and better, and not just the year, but the decade ahead. And now, for the entire month of January, we'll be showing our appreciation for that support. Anybody who joins our Patreon at the $10 or higher level will receive a free Roaring Twenties Lions of Liberty t-shirt, and anybody who joins at $5 will receive 30% off one of those very same t-shirts that is essentially giving you one at cost. So please do head over to patreon.com/lionsofliberty, consider supporting the show, and let's start this decade. Let's start the Roaring Twenties with a roar for liberty.
Welcome to the Lions of Liberty podcast. Here's your host, your guide, your shining beacon of liberty, Mark Clare.
Cool, dudes. Well, this isn't going to be too formal. We're just going to start talking. In fact, as far as I'm concerned, the show has already started because I'm here with a couple great libertarians. Starting with this guy, I can't even believe this right now. I cannot even believe that this guy has been on Brian McWilliams' show, Electric Liberty Land, 2 times, and this is his first time on the flagship Lions of Liberty podcast. Now, I have no one to blame but myself, because this is the first time I invited you as well. It is my good friend, Michael Bolden. Not good friend. He's just an acquaintance. Michael Bolden of the 10th Amendment Center. What's up?
Dude, I've been on the show. You forgot?
Not mine.
No, yours.
Mm-mm. When?
I don't know. I just thought it was, oh, whatever. Hi, thank you for having me here.
Listen, Stoner.
I thought we'd have a little fun to start.
I was the very first guest. You don't remember me?
Yeah, right.
And the other gentleman cackling in the background was one Joshua Smith, current candidate for the chairmanship of the Libertarian National, well, the Libertarian National Committee of the Libertarian Party. For the pedestrians out there, Joshua, what's up, my guy?
Hey, what's going on, man? Thank you so much for having me. And you're free to call me one of your very good friends, because we partied in New Orleans.
Oh, no, we have partied. So. We've hung out in New Orleans. Way past Bolden's bedtime.
Yeah, way past. I think it was past my bedtime.
I used to stay up till 11, but now it's like 7:30 and I'm done.
I think the time we started partying that night, that fateful night a couple years ago, was Bolden had already been asleep for 2 hours on the West Coast.
Exactly.
I was juicing that day, so it was a little weak.
How do you know what day this was?
I don't know. I'm going to have a response for everything.
Well, this is really going to be a casual episode. I wanted to bring a couple of you guys, no, just you two guys, on to have a little segment that I often call libertarians in living rooms drinking liquor. I am drinking wine. I believe Josh has a cherry Coke?
Cherry Coke, man. Yeah, absolutely.
And Bolden, I don't know. I don't know if he's allowed to tell. He's holding up a pen of some kind. I don't know what's in it. I'm not going to ask unless you want to tell us. Nah, it's all
right. It's a 10-to-1 CBD to THC dosist pen.
Hey, this guy. Do you have a link, a discount code people can get that?
Coupon code LOL.
Coupon code bold.
Since we're throwing out our affiliate links, you know.
Hey, throw it out. But don't. Well, no, we have our own LP link, so it's kind of, that's fair, a little bit of a conflict.
Fair. No, I was talking about for North Spokane.
Yeah, and throw it out. Actually, we have one of those too. I just haven't.
Do you guys have one?
Sorry, promoting it. We just got it
from Pickens.
We just got it set up the other week.
Nice. Well, mine's Smith 2020. So.
You can use it. It's okay. It'll be your payment for coming on the show, because there's no other payment.
You think I get paid for anything that I do besides my job?
No, that's why I question your sanity. At least Bolden's getting paid for this.
Exactly.
Not for the show, but.
Wait a minute. You're getting paid?
This episode. Yeah. It's a $1,500 deposit.
spread out over the next 30 years.
I had to pay Mark to come on here.
It's pay to play. Pay to play over here. This is the future libertarians want. You pay to come on podcast. I can't wait until this future comes up. But I don't want to say it's a good thing, because it's not a good thing, because I had no plan for this show because I'm a professional. But there happens to be some news this week that I think really does relate to, well, the work all of us are doing, really. It's the reason I became so passionate about talking about this stuff in the first place, and that is the war issue. And this is a week where there's been a lot in the news regarding this stuff. Before we get into all that, I want to let you guys have a second to plug what you do in life, in case there's anybody out there that somehow stumbled upon this and has no idea what's going on in the Liberty world. So, Bolden, how about you give us the 30-second pitch? What the hell do you do?
Is there such a thing?
All right, you get a minute. 10 seconds, one for every amendment.
10th Amendment Center, 10thamendmentcenter.com. Just check it out. That's it.
Okay. I was about to say, Michael Bolden in 30 seconds? Good luck.
Michael Bolton?
Bolton. Bolton, Bolden. One ticket to save them all, 2020.
Don't get me singing.
And Joshua, as we know, you are running for the chairmanship of the Libertarian Party, as you did 2 years ago. Why don't I just start by grilling you a little bit? What is different here in 2020? Or, yeah, it is 2020 now. Look at that.
It is, yeah.
From 2018 when you first ran. What was your vote total last time?
About 23.6%.
And that was coming from a place where 8 months prior, pretty much no one had, I had not heard of you.
Just a lowly janitor, you know?
Yeah, just a lowly janitor. So what do you think for you is going to be different about this time? Why do you think, obviously I don't think you'd be doing this if you didn't think you had a chance to win, or maybe you would, I don't know. What do you think is different about this cycle that gives you a better chance to win the chairmanship? As far as I know, the guy who beat you last time, Nick Sarwark, is not, I don't know if he's running, but he has not announced one way or the other. So give us the lay down.
Yeah, I think
the lay down, is that even a phrase?
Is it the layout, the blueprint?
Yeah, whatever. You know what I mean.
I think that I have a lot more meat to point to this time. You know, I was running on hopes and dreams and goals and a plan in 2018, and 2020 I've actually been able to institute a lot of that plan. I've been able to show that I'm the number one recruiter on the LNC. You know, I've been able to out fundraise a lot of my counterparts, and so it's I have successes to point to, as opposed to just these goals. Like, I can show that what I said in 2018 was real. I was going to do it, and it's working. And so, you know, that's the big difference. But also, people know who I am now. They have a little more trust in me. I've been able to meet even more people. You know, I've been still traveling around the country a lot for the last 2 years, and moved back to California, and I've been able to really talk to a lot of the California libertarians, which is the biggest state affiliate in the country, if you're not aware. Looking at you there, Texas. But yeah, it's just a lot more success.
More libertarians than Texas somehow?
Yep. Yes, we
How
do.
How is that even possible?
I don't know, man. We're good at what we do. We also have the highest elected official here in California.
And that is not to say that he is high per se. He's just at the
You might think he's high. Jeff Hewitt, you might think he's high when you meet him, but he's not.
He's a very chill dude, though, so I have my suspicions.
Absolutely, absolutely. Hey, all three of us are from California. This is a California Libertarian roundtable.
I didn't even think of that to this very moment. I think when you ran last time, those were the things you just talked about are two of the biggest things you talked about: recruitment and fundraising, and how important they are to the party, especially a party so small. When you actually get more members in a party like this and more money in a party like this, it actually makes a significant difference. Whereas, I don't know, if the Republicans get a couple more $1,000, I don't know how much difference that really makes. And then I think the third aspect that really motivated you to run is messaging that comes out of the leadership of the party. So I'm kind of curious. And we'll get back to Bold and stuff while he just hit your pen for a few minutes while we talk about libertarian party stuff.
Already there.
What do you think should be the role of the chairman when it comes to messaging for the party? There's an interesting article I actually read maybe a month or two ago by a fellow named Dan Johnson. I'm sure you guys are familiar with this character. And he's been on the show several times. And he kind of wrote a really interesting piece talking about how the chairmanship of a party, whatever it may be, whether the libertarian or not, it really should be the business aspect, the meetings, if you will, the organization, the fundraising, yada, yada, yada. And then other political parties have more of like a party leader, and like Tim Moen in Canada for the Canadian Libertarian Party. He's more of the leader. He's the messenger. He's the person who's putting out like really best leading by example with as far as messaging and talking about the issues and that sort of thing goes. So I'm just curious your thoughts on that divide, and how do you think your run is more focused on that business side, or more focused on that messaging side, or obviously there's a mix of the two there.
Sure. I think there's a mix. And you know, we have an executive director for the Libertarian Party that takes care of the day-to-day business. That's what they do. That's their, they literally get paid to do all the business aspect of this party. So I would disagree that the chairman's only there to do the business side of things. I think the chairman is always going to be looked at as a figurehead for the party. And I agree in a sense that the candidates are our biggest mouthpieces around the country. They're the ones who go out into their communities, make a difference, talk to people, try to get policy instituted in their communities that's going to enrich the lives of their constituency. But when Nick makes a post, people understand that he's the chair of the party. And so messaging has to be on point. And you know, for me, I just want to lay out some solid messaging goals and say, hey, this is the stuff that I'm going to stick to. You know, it's the stuff that I've seen work over the last several years as far as libertarian ideals go, especially the anti-war message, which I'm sure we'll get into a lot here.
We'll get into it right now because that's where we are. Because you know, I don't think there's any point in asking you what kind of message you would be pushing out there, because you're already pushing a message from your role on the LNC, and you are clearly very passionate about the anti-war issue. I know Michael is as well, so you're allowed to talk again, Michael, whenever you like. And as we've seen this week, the war issue has really come to the forefront with the events that have taken place with Iran, the drone strike of one of their top generals, or maybe it is their top general, and then obviously we've seen the retaliation, which to me seems like it was really just so Iran could say to its people, yeah, we retaliated. It seems like it was pretty much just a bunch of missiles that did nothing. But of course, since then, we've also seen a downing of an airliner, which is just awful, a civilian airliner. It's really not exactly clear at the time of this recording what happened there. I do think it's probably an accident one way or the other, because I don't think they would even intentionally do that. That would be a really stupid move. It's their, half of the plane was their own people. But obviously, events like that just increase the tension even more. And I think highlight the how much civilians are hurt by war, especially in the fog of war or even impending war or that sort of thing. But do you think that the Libertarian Party should be primarily an anti-war party? Do you think this should be like right at the forefront of the things we're talking about? Because, as you know, not everybody agrees with that. And either of you may chime on.
We'll let Michael go first because I just took the last.
You can just comment on a libertarian movement in general or what have you. You know?
Well, I think war is actually the greatest threat to liberty. I take the same position that James Madison took, that war is the parent of armies. From armies, you get debts and taxes. And the way he put it, his words, is armies, debts, and taxes are the known instruments for putting the many under the domination of the few. I think we've got a trifecta on that right now. And of course, if you're going to talk about liberty, the greatest threat to liberty being the power of the state, especially in warfare. So many other things branch out from there that if the LP isn't leading, if the libertarian movement isn't leading on that, then I don't think they really exist. I mean, if you're relying on the so-called Democrat resistance on war, you're basically relying on people who just want to manage the war themselves and oppose it when a Republican is in charge. And that isn't a real anti-war position. There are some very consistent progressives, of course, but they are few and far between. I would also make a point regarding attack and retaliation. Personally, I don't like referring to those things too often, because I think so many people are confused by what's really going on. And I think Hornberger's article over at Future of Freedom Foundation from this morning, I guess it's Thursday the 9th when we're recording, right? Hornberger was basically saying,
pulling back the curtain. I wasn't going to air this for a year.
Live stream. Hornberger was basically saying, you know, the notion of what the mainstream media and the politicians are talking about, like that we may get into a war, just that thought is absolutely ridiculous. The U.S. has been at war with Iran in varying degrees for decades. We can obviously go back to 1953 when the CIA helped stage a coup and overthrew the democratically elected government. You could hate that government, but they helped and installed and backed a ruthless dictator for decades. And these types of things, plus stationing your military in 150 plus countries around the world, surrounding a nation, and then somebody gets pissed off eventually and fights back or gets mad at you.
Hold your horses, kitty cats. I have to jump in here for 1 second and tell you about another great libertarian podcast. And this one is not your typical podcast. This one doesn't really focus so much on the ideas of liberty, but on on music. And who doesn't love music in some form or another? I guess some people don't, but who really wants to know those people anyway? Let's be honest. Anyway, the show is aptly titled Sounds Like Liberty. Sounds Like Liberty is hosted by Liberty's favorite nerdy husband, Nick Pacone, and his wife, Lizzie. They speak to guests every single week to find out who has the best music taste here in Ancapistan. And the Lions of Liberty have actually been on the show, at least a good number of us. Myself, Brian McWilliams, and Howie Snowden have all been on Sounds Like Liberty. We're still waiting for the John Oderman episode, but we're not actually sure if John listens to music because we already know he doesn't watch movies. So here's what I want you to do. I want you to go ahead and go on over to ancapmusic.com and check out Sounds Like Liberty, or just search Sounds Like Liberty on your favorite podcatcher. That's all I do. I stick completely to the podcatchers, but Sounds Like Liberty is an excellent show and really does a great job of merging culture, music, and liberty together. I highly recommend this program. If that wasn't enough, the show is co-hosted by an African-American female ANCAP. I mean, what more could you ask for? And by the way, Nick did tell me to say that in the ads. Do check out Sounds Like Liberty. Go to ancapmusic.com right now to learn more. How do you guys think we can break through this propaganda out there? Because it seems like whenever there's an incident with another country or something like this, it always just seems to be like history started with that last thing that happened. Like, as far as anyone in America knows, this started with they attacked our embassy in Baghdad, and now nothing happened before that. Like,
but do you guys follow Sal the Agorist on?
Yeah.
Sal has been posting these amazing, well, always amazing memes. But one of them that I saw recently was a timeline of the U.S.-Iran conflict, and it started at 1953, and it said nothing here, and then 1979 it said Iran kidnapped some people, and then nothing in between, and then Iran shoots down some drones. I mean, that's really the way that the neocons, the bloodthirsty war pigs out there, politicians and the general public alike, that's how they view things. And it's because they're totally ignorant of things that are going on. Now, I know, and I'm sure you guys have been dealing with this too, when you talk about an anti-war, a pro-peace message with people in this kind of environment, those right-wingers are the most impossible to reach. They are the worst of the worst, the lowest of the lowest. And I don't think many of them can be reached, but all we can do is just continue telling the truth about these things. And if one or two people listen to us, to me, that's a win. We've got a long, long way to go before I think this is a country based on peace or a society based on peace, because there's so many people that crave these types of conflicts and war.
Yeah, I agree. I don't know if you're familiar with a page called The Other 98%.
Yeah.
So it's a very big leftist page. They supported Bernie. There's about 6 million followers on that page. They actually shared one of my anti-war tweets today.
Nice.
Which I thought was really cool because, you know, normally these people wouldn't give us the time of day, but we can unite with other economic spectrum people under an anti-war message. I mean, everyone can get behind an anti-war message.
Are you suggesting bottom unity with anti-warness at the bottom?
Definitely an anti-war message. Yeah,
they've got 6 million people on their page. I don't think that's
top
bottom
unity.
Yeah, well, here's the thing. Middle unity? If I can unite, I'll unite with anybody against war. I don't care who it is. I will unite with anybody that is anti-foreign interventionism. I will unite with them. I mean, that's what brought me to this movement. It's the most important message there is to me. You know, I like I said in interviews with you before, I was in the military. I was part of the Shock and Awe campaign in Iraq. I saw what we were doing. It was horrible. It was a giant waste of money and innocent human lives. And I will unite with anybody that wants to roll back the warfare state. So, you know, and today I got to prove that the anti-war message can travel. You know, I got to prove that by waking up and seeing this tweet shared from, you know, and it's from a page that says Joshua Smith for LNC chair. Great. So they know I'm running for Libertarian Party chair. They're sharing that tweet because it's so pertinent to the situation. And so it's a message that travels, and it's a message that the Libertarian Party, like Mike says, it has to be, you know, one of the biggest parts of what we do all the time.
You know, one of the beauty, the most beautiful things about liberty activism, being a libertarian, is I think it's the Horton rule is what I would call it. You can always outleft the left and always outright the right. I was talking about how a real anti-war message is really being anti-war, not just like anti-Trump or anti-Bush. Because if you guys were out there, I don't know if you were, but I was out in the streets with the radical communist answer coalition during the Iraq war. I was there on the day that the bombs started dropping in 2003. I was helping organize marches in the streets for years. And then all of a sudden, soon as Barack Obama, the peace bomber, soon as he got in, there is no more people in the streets. So if we rely on the left or the right rather than leading them, then these movements really don't go anywhere. And the other great thing is that on issue by issue basis, libertarians can make a coalition with anybody. Because if you really want to just get shit done and you're focusing on war, you can partner with the absurd people with the worst economic views on earth. As long as they are with you on one thing, you can work with them on that. And I found, at least in my experience, the more that I do that, every now and then, it doesn't happen real often, but every now and then, someone who is totally opposed to you on everything but one issue, let's say surveillance, for example, they'll be like, you know, that dude has been so consistent on surveillance for so many years, and I'm totally on board with his message on surveillance. You know, maybe I should listen to him on gun rights or on war or something. It happens once in a while. And I think if we're really thinking long game, maybe that's the approach we have to take.
I think this is an important thing to talk about, because I think for libertarians, it can often be a big challenge, because especially when we first get into these ideas and become very passionate about them, you know, we just want to scream at everybody, and anybody that goes off message is like, you just want to attack anyone who doesn't fully agree with you. I mean, when I first got into Ron Paul and all this stuff, I couldn't believe that people didn't accept the full libertarian message and didn't understand everything he was talking about. But I think especially within the Libertarian Party, in many ways, it makes sense to have purists of a sort, to have people that are there trying to make sure the message is exactly right, depending on the context. So within the Libertarian Party, a party who's supposed to be the forebearer of the libertarian message of the ideas of liberty in the United States politically, that makes sense to try to get your leadership to be as libertarian as possible. But then when we're talking about politics in general, I mean, you're not going to convince the entire United States to be fully libertarian. If you're going to wait for that to be able to make some progress on something, you're going to have a long, long
good
wait.
Call. Good call, man.
What we can always do, like you both have been saying, is that we can always find the issues where not only do we agree with them, we're way better than they are. We're always way better.
And, you know, one other thing, and I totally agree with you on wanting leadership in the movement, in the party together to be pure libertarian. But you can be pure libertarian on just one issue. Like, you can go to a gun rights supporter and be like, yeah, you know, I'm not really, you know, I get what you're doing with this whole constitutional carry thing, but you know, the idea that the Second Amendment is your gun permit is wrong. I disagree with any government permission on the right to keep and bear arms, but let's find a way to work together to move things forward. And then on the war, you can work like what you're doing. Like, dude, you're connecting with the left on this issue, building trust. They're willing to share your information. So you just keep doing that. But good leaders will partner with different people on different issues.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it works for me because a lot of people are really dumb and I'm kind of dumb. So it's really easy. It's really easy for me to like connect with these kind of people. You know what I mean?
I can see it now. Smith for LNC chair. I'm kind of dumb.
It's coming.
I try.
I could literally have an ad out in about 15 minutes.
I think that's why I inspire people.
I'll give you your first
ad
on Lines of Liberty for free.
I'm being serious though. Like, you know, there's so many people in this movement that are so intelligent. I mean, intelligent beyond what most
almost
people can comprehend. Yeah, most people can't comprehend what we're talking about.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm that blue collar hashtag janitor life guy. You know what I mean? That's like, I've been there. I've been where you're at, but I understand these principles, and let me show you how they can enrich your life.
Do you want to tell people? So well. Do you want to tell people where the janitor joke comes from? Since you're gonna probably make it like 10 times.
who was it? I don't even know who it was.
This Herd character.
Mark Herd called me a janitor online, and I just thought it was funny, so I monetized my hater and made a bunch of money that day off him. So
rock and roll.
No big deal. It was good. We made some Toxic Avenger memes, which was great. But no, it's true, man. I'm just a blue collar guy, you know, from the Bay Area that I can connect with people. And I think that's why I've been able to inspire so many people to join up and get involved and start
you know,
caring
but
about these issues.
This idea of being dumb, I know we're like having a laugh at it. But being able to communicate in a way that resonates with people is incredibly important.
Well, look at Trump speaks on a third grade level, and he resonates with a lot of people.
I think he is an evil monster, but he is a brilliant marketer. He knows how to push people's buttons, and he knows how to connect with people where they are.
He knows how to piss off the people he wants to piss off and have them overreact, and he knows how to inspire or whatever the people that he's trying
monetize
to.
Monetize your haters.
The late, great Harry Brown, who's probably my intellectual inspiration, had this book, Liberty A to Z. I haven't read it for a while, but it was sound bites that you can use to advance liberty right now. Never, I was just looking at
him. I've read a couple of his books, and I've never, I don't think I've even heard of
it. I just pulled it up on Amazon. It's a Kindle book, $6, but it's 872 libertarian sound bites you can use right now. I'm sure some of it's dated, but there's going to be I think reading through the way Harry communicated. We used to always talk about when the Ron Paul thing first started. Man, if Ron could, you know, like communicate. Ron's a great communicator, but Harry Brown was an incredible communicator. And he was the LP presidential candidate in 96 and 2000, I believe. I can't recommend his book on this enough. It's just easy peasy reading. And even if this stuff is dated, I think it'll give you ideas on ways to connect with people.
In fact, he beat Jacob Hornberger for the nomination.
Did he?
Yeah.
Oh, that's right. There's all the conflict between those two.
Yeah, some kind of controversy. The funny thing about that controversy that's going on is I actually reached out to Perry Willis personally.
Okay.
Who was the campaign manager for Harry Brown recently.
Jim Babka too, right?
Yeah, I think Jim Babka was involved with it as well. But I reached out directly to Perry Willis because he was the one named in all the drama. And
oh, okay.
I said, Perry, tell me what's going on, man. I just want to know, you know, personally, man to man, what happened. He's like, look, I am not going to let decades old beef get come between. He said he has no doubt that Jacob Hornberger is a great voice for the movement, and he doesn't think that any of that will affect his work for the party. And he's been a staunch, you know, messenger for the party for the movement for decades, and so he doesn't seem to care about it. Yeah,
Jacob is awesome. Harry Brown to me was my god in this movement.
Sure,
but I love Jacob. It's really the same messaging, and you know, I didn't even realize that there was that conflict. And when I had first met Jacob, I'm like, man, you're the best at this since Harry Brown. Like, that's literally.
Did he get really awkward then?
He's
cool about it.
Like, he was so nice.
It does go to show that, you know, libertarian infighting is nothing new. Okay.
This has been going off since the beginning of libertarianism.
Exactly.
Of course, you have the Cato versus the Rothbard infighting that's been going since day one, at least in party politics.
It does speak to something else we can get into, which is generally just like how liberty should be marketed, how we market these ideas. I think one way is what we already talked about, where you're just really consistent on important issues to the point that people that have those issues in other areas of politics that's important to them, you're the best one on that issue. You can really resonate with those people. Yeah. Some cynical people would say, well, that's great. They'll like you on the anti-war stuff, but then whatever, they're going to go be communists or something. Something like that. And there are those that would argue, well, we need to have a little bit of a smoother message. We need to ease people into liberty.
You're not lessening the message when you do that. I think that's really the key. I mean, some people might approach that in a let's talk to them in their language, which means going soft on the message. And I think it really is you go hardcore on the message, but you don't overwhelm people with everything. Like, oh, yeah, well, you support, single-payer healthcare, so I can't talk to you about war and peace or surveillance or something else or asset forfeiture or police abuse or any of this stuff. You can absolutely talk to them about these other things. And I think the more we do that, the more people will trust and respect libertarians and be willing to listen to things that they may not have in the first place. And especially since, I mean, you look at the last two presidential candidates. I mean, like, could it have been a better opportunity for a libertarian candidate to get the message out there in a perfect manner or close to it? And I think that's why it's so important to always be consistent on the message, even if you're only talking in small pieces of it.
Yeah, and that's certainly been a big part of, I know, what Josh has been doing with not only his run for chair, but also with the work that you're all doing within the Mises Caucus. It's all been about the messaging and trying to get the Libertarian Party onto what you would describe, what we would describe as a more libertarian message from the leadership, not just the chairmanship, but from the candidates themselves. And I don't think we need to rehash the Johnson Weld campaign a million times over, but you're already seeing, I don't want to name names, but you're already seeing some people come into the party who weren't here until recently, who are suddenly announcing, am I being a little too obvious here, who are suddenly announcing presidential runs. And it feels like, okay, is this going to happen again? Because how many times has this party run a retread? Gary Johnson, Bob Barr, whatever, every bar. I mean, they're all bad.
I mean, to go for an ex-drug
warrior. There's some
great
libertarian
like
named Steve Barr out there that's so upset right now. No,
I think the whole thing was that Harry Brown didn't win it. Michael Badnarik was as hardcore as you can get. And I don't know if
he
didn't even have
a driver's license.
Badnarik is a great dude.
He's awesome.
Not my first presidential vote. I did vote for Bush in 2000 when I was a dumb 20-year-old. But he was my first time I voted Libertarian Party. And I really knew nothing about libertarianism at the time. I was just becoming very anti-war in general. And I obviously, but that took Bush off the table. And like, I could just see through the propaganda that Kerry was the fakest anti-war guy that, I mean, he wasn't even trying. Right. He was like, well, I think we should have gone to Iraq like 80% less with less force. Like, what are you even telling? Like, this is
That's
not
the
even
same message we're hearing today, really, exactly. Or somebody else should be
it,
in
it
charge
of it.
It
was a conversation of degrees or a slight shift in strategy. It wasn't, this is fucking wrong and evil and needs to stop now. And that's when I just said, okay, well, at least these libertarian guys, I don't know, they're not those guys, and I kind of know a little bit about it now. I've heard of this Ron Paul guy, so I'll just click that box. Of course,
it's very crazy, it's very interesting, and I think something that a lot of people don't understand even in the movement, that when you saw somebody who wasn't these two people, you kind of gravitated towards that. And that's why I've been so vehement in the fact that we need to not act like the two old parties. We can't act like the two old parties because there's already the two old parties. And if we act like them, those people aren't going to come over here. They already have these successful parties they can be a part of. And the 61% of the population that didn't vote in 2016 aren't voting because they hate those two parties. So it's like, it's really a double-edged sword trying to act like the two old parties. And so I think that's a great testament to that.
Can I tell a quick side story on that? Joshua, you said, you know, the way people come to this from like, they're not these two people. I just wanted to share a little personal history.
Yeah.
A lot of people come into the movement from like one political party or another. I was a self-proclaimed communist. I think I was probably a really bad one, but I just didn't want to be one or the other. And the person who really inspired me of all things was Michael Moore. I was watching this film of his in the late 90s, some book tour that he was on. And I remember there was this scene of him in Times Square, and it was Dole versus whoever, Bush, Dole, something like that. I don't remember. Two guys, but maybe Clinton Dole.
Clinton and Dole.
They had them both up there, and Moore stops and he points and he shows like, look, see, they look exactly the same. They do everything the same. And that resonated with me at the time. That message is really kind of a big deal for status. He didn't, man. Of course, right? And he was bad at that point too. He was always a socialist, a really just bad one. But to me, just hearing that, you know, no matter who you choose, you get more garbage is a really, really important message. And someone who can be consistent on principle would be even obviously better. I just wanted to share that. It doesn't always just happen from Republicans and Democrats.
Yeah. You guys heard it here, though. Michael Bolden just endorsed me, so.
Is that official?
Why wouldn't I?
I'm just saying.
Smith, I'm a dummy. Vote
as a side note, I am...
No, I'm kind of dumb. That's what it is.
I'm an official advisor for the LP Mises Caucus, so if I wasn't endorsing you, I probably would be doing a bad job.
Yeah.
Are you still
I'm
not
telling
a
Michael
the,
Ice on you.
Are you still not an official member of the party, Michael?
No, I never will be.
What's your reasoning behind that?
Well, my work with the 10th Amendment Center really requires me to be nonpartisan. I think pretty obvious where my goals lie with everyone. But if I were to show up and have a conversation with a Democrat or Republican about a policy proposal I wanted them to push, my assumption after doing this, you know, for well over a decade is I'm not going to be able to get through as many doors if I'm affiliated with the party.
That makes sense.
And your work, we can't have you do anything detrimental to your work, Michael Bolton.
Instead, it's how I'm rich, right?
Yeah. No, I mean, the work that you do.
You got that fancy studio people. And that fancy pen.
And all those fancy meals that you always post on your Facebook.
You have actually done something impressive, though, Michael, and that is you have made Liberty your full-time job. This is the dream of many out there. What advice would you have to anybody out there that is so passionate about Liberty? Right? What's that?
Kind of entrepreneurial advice.
Entrepreneurial advice, yes. Because no one's going to pay some dummy like me to just come here and talk about it. Actually, people.
You don't have to go through my funnel landing page to get this. You don't have to get three free videos and then you just click through for $99.99. I'll give you the rest of the series.
He's looking at you, Tom Woods.
I was just going to say, is this a subtle dig at Tom? Because I've done a few of those of his, and that sounds like the same process.
This is just funnel marketing, landing page marketing 101. Everybody does that. Who does? My advice, if you want to make a living at advocating for liberty like I have, maybe better than I do, that's great. I would love that.
Definitely better than you do should be the goal.
Yeah. My advice is to not set out with that as your goal. Because you're going to run into so many situations where you're thinking about the money, the conversions, rather than what you do. And I think the number one thing you need to do is do something because you love it. You love liberty, so you advocate for liberty. You find a way to do it, and you do it whether you make a dime at it or not. And then if you do, then your passion is fully behind it, and it'll allow you to get through those times that are so difficult that you get pneumonia because you're working so hard for so long, or you have to deal with some of the most horrible media people on the face of the globe. And you'll be able to get through those things because you love what you do and you're not just doing it just to earn a living. That's my personal
history. Mike literally just explained how I'm living my life right now.
Especially this kind of work, we're talking about advocating for principles that a lot of people will hate us for, right? And we are as right as we can be, as often as we can be. And you're going to get the vitriol of all kinds of people, family, friends, neighbors. I mean, I definitely got laughed at and attacked a lot more from people that I hang out with here locally in LA when Obama was in office. But certainly a lot of those same people, as soon as Trump was inaugurated, I started getting phone calls and texts like, hey, Bolden, you know that political stuff you've been talking about. But you definitely have to go through a lot of crap with a lot of people when you are working for liberty. And again, my number one piece of advice is don't try to make a business out of it. Just do it because you love it. And I think you'll have a greater chance of making a business out of it.
Yeah, it is sort of ironic how it works. I mean, when I first started this podcast, the idea of money or like even getting any kind of income from it, which we don't take income, but we do have a significant, Patreon follower that we all put back into the show. But that idea wasn't even on my mind. I just knew I had this passion and energy for these ideas. I had to do something with it. I was a fan of podcasts, and I couldn't find that many libertarian podcasts, which seems like a crazy thing right now because there's like 10,000 of them. But at the time, I really couldn't find a consistent show I could just tune into and get an interview every week. That's all I wanted. So I was like, okay, I guess I got to make it. And then like one day later, Tom Wood started his show. So whatever. But
I remember when Tom started that show. I'm like, okay, you sure you want to do this on Blog Talk Radio? Side note, is it weird if, like, I'm actually interested on a personal level between you two guys, what other libertarian podcasts do you listen to? I'm consuming so much content lately, I really am just interested in learning.
Tom Woods, Lions of Liberty, and Part of the Problem are my three big ones. Anything Scott Horton does.
Yeah.
I watch your videos.
I used to have so many. Now I pretty much... Honestly, there's really not a show that I listen to every single episode of at this point because there's just not enough time in the world. But I'd say I regularly tune into Part of the Problem, Tom Woods, Free Man Beyond the Wall, sponsored.
Yeah, that one too.
I like also that one. I don't know why, and I love Dave so much. I don't know why he's not in my rotation. I just need to, like, it's one of those things where you develop a new habit after you've done it for like a week or two. And I feel like, especially with Horton, it's like I won't listen to Horton for 2 months, and then all of a sudden I've got 24 hours a day trying to catch up and just trying to absorb it all at the same time. I tend to kind of binge listen podcasts. I'll like play catch up on a lot of stuff.
And if you guys want a podcast that's newer and completely disorganized and hilarious, the Burning Boots podcast. It's actually number one on podcast ranker. It's pretty cool. Just these dudes, these Boogaloo boys down in a basement in Florida somewhere. They're hilarious.
That's awesome.
Yeah, if you ever get a chance, Boogaloo they're pretty boys. Funny. Yeah, Boogaloo boys. Yeah.
All right, so I have a. I don't know if we're gonna have time for a full bonus segment. So I mean, there's a couple of questions that were put out there by listeners of the show that I want to kind of get into with you guys, and then if we have time, we'll do maybe some of the sillier ones afterwards for a little bonus.
That's a bonus, nice.
But I have a specific question at least for each of you guys. So, and these both come from Bobby Wilson. He's been a longtime supporter of ours, one of our longest and highest paying, highest contributing Patreon supporters. Bobby wants to know. First, this one's for Josh. Of course, you guys can both chime in on all of this stuff. But he wants to know what state. Do you think that the Libertarian Party can make the biggest splash in 2020? Obviously, that's going to depend on who the candidate is and who the Republican and Democrat candidates are. But if you had to look right now at the state that's maybe most ripe for success for the Libertarian Party, what would you say that is?
Well, I'd say any of the real small states. You know, we it wouldn't take as much resources to have a bigger effect there. But I'm really excited about a project that we just started in the National Party called the Frontier Project. For the National Libertarian Party, and that's starting in Wyoming. So Apollo Pazell, who's our candidate support specialist, I mean, this is what he does. He works with candidates. He essentially took $30,000, went to Wyoming, and he's trying to flip every state legislator seat.
Nice.
Wyoming. And so they're going to put a big focus on Wyoming.
How many seats are there, like seven there?
Oh, I don't know the exact number, but it's, I mean, some of them
Wyoming have not, House, it's like 60.
Yeah, and some of them have not been challenged for decades, you know what I mean? And so it's
are they running as L's or
yeah, they're running as libertarians?
Because I mean, there's like the Win at the Door, Young Americans for Liberty, they've been doing that, and they've got a few dozen people that they've got, maybe 50 or so on the state. Like, obviously 10th Amendment Center dude loves this strategy, because I don't think there really is any chance other than messaging to change anything in Washington, D.C., but there can be impact that can happen on a state local level.
Are you going to drop it? My favorite word, nullify? You going to say it?
You just did.
All right.
I'm sorry. I can't say that. You're racist.
Wait, is that a real thing? Do people associate that word with racism?
Seriously? No? You didn't know that?
Oh, you
have
mean,
you seen my
the whole zombie?
Not seen my Southern Poverty Law Center profile page.
I certainly have.
Okay,
Can we talk about this?
I read it because, every morning. It's so hilarious.
Can we talk? Wait, I want to talk about this because knowing that knowing Michael Bolden personally, and then knowing that he's also designated as like this white supremacist on SPLC is the funniest thing to me. I can't handle it because he's like the nicest.
Well, ironically, he hates white people. That's the weird thing.
I am racist. Yes, white people are evil.
They were right about the racism. They just had it
He's like
wrong.
The nicest, like most down to earth, like
just a hard
person. I don't get it.
No one who would meet me in person would ever think I am from the radical right. Now, Southern Poverty Law Center, they have their list. They put hundreds of groups and people on there. But this is a special list that I'm on. I am one of the 30 leaders of the new radical right, the 30 dangerous leaders. Like, obviously, they didn't hang out with me at all, because that would be, I mean, but it's cool. You know, I have had some, we'll just say some issues with travel since that happened. But this has been about 8 years now.
Wait, for real? What, like flying or what?
Yeah.
Can you detail this?
No, we're not going to really.
you've really intrigued me now. Like,
SPLC sends this specific report out to all law enforcement agencies. So maybe not all, but major ones and federal for sure.
What a bunch of snitches.
So, I mean, at first I was a little stressed out about it, but you know, between that and Rachel Maddow did a 14-minute segment on my organization a few years ago. I remember I wrote an article in response.
Ooh, where can I watch that? Can I find that?
I'm sure it's on YouTube someplace. I would think. I haven't looked at it in years, but
some help you are. Now I got to search YouTube.
For you're right. it's called Confederates in the Attic was the segment. On
I'll
Maddow's
try to link
show.
To it. If
Maybe
I can
it was
find
10
it.
Minutes, something like that. So I wrote an article in response. I sent it to MSNBC. I don't know why they didn't get back to me. But instead, I decided to. I mean, you know, I don't know why Rach doesn't call. But so I sent the article over to Lou Rockwell, and he was kind enough to publish the article.
Shocking.
At Lou Rockwell.
That neo-Confederate Lou.
He doesn't run all my stuff, but Lou has always been really, really good.
No,
yeah,
and, absolutely.
And, he wrote back just this short.
I found it. I'll link it in today's show notes.
Nice.
I found it through the show notes page of your interview with Thaddeus Russell.
Oh, no way.
Someone
that's
else
awesome.
Did the work for me already.
That's awesome. So Lou sends this little note back and he says, you know, I know the pin hurts. I'm trying to think of my best Lou Rockwell voice. I know the pin hurts, Michael, but it's a badge of honor. But certainly, you know, at first I was like, God damn it. You know, like, why am I getting attacked like this? I'm a good guy. But, you know, Lou, it made sense. You know, they don't attack you for this kind of stuff unless you're doing something right. And this isn't just to necessarily talk about myself, but the more that people hate us for advancing liberty, in a way, it's better. But certainly at the same time, we don't want to make everybody hate us, like I know some people have a tendency to do.
Well, if you're not being effective, no one's going to bother hating you because no one's going to have heard of you.
That's right. Felt. That's exactly how I felt last year, Michael. You know, I just the hate and vitriol that was slung.
Are you getting it as much in this in this chair race? I feel like some people, and I a lot of times I'm a lurker in some of these libertarian groups and comments sections and stuff like that. I like reading a lot of it. And I've noticed that there has been I've seen a bunch of times, not just one or two, but a bunch of times people saying, you know, I didn't really like Joshua and I definitely wasn't on his side or I was skeptical, but you know, I see him doing the work now for a couple of years and he's earning my respect. Whether I'll vote for him or not is another story. Sure. But to me, that is a huge, you're making inroad by being honest and by being consistent and just busting your ass. And that's got to be a big part of it.
When you're bringing humans and money into the party, who can really argue with it?
Well, that was the thing last year.
Are you really number one?
I'm the number one recruiter.
Other than Woods, right?
I'm the number one recruiter on the LNC. I think I'm number two in all of the LP under Woods. Yeah.
That's
Woods
awesome.
Is definitely by far number one. And then I know that Lions of Liberty is up there. Your guys' affiliate's doing really well.
LP.org/Lions of Liberty.
But last year it was like, I never knew who I was going to be when I woke up. Was I going to be the deadbeat dad, the white supremacist, the neo-Nazi, the neo-Confederate? I never knew.
The janitor.
I just never knew. Yeah, the janitor. God, there's so many going around. The hardcore alcoholic that doesn't drink on the weekdays.
The one drinking cherry Coke for the show. Yeah.
Yeah. That guy
is really hardcore.
There's mezcal in there.
Yeah, there was a rumor going around that I had $700 bar tabs at every state convention I went to.
It's like, I wish I could afford those bar tabs.
Yeah, dude, really? I wish I could afford $700 bar tabs. That would be great. No, but it's exactly how it was. It was like I was being effective. I stepped on the scene. I worried a lot of people that I was actually going to win chair and they didn't like me. And so they flail. And that's what people do when they're afraid of someone else's success. They flail. They try to come up with anything they can to turn that person away. And it happens. And that just, it's a mark of success. Absolutely. And it's a lot better for me this year. Anytime somebody comes at me like that this year, I'm just like, all right.
You're also not being as combative, just as a side note. You are not. No. I mean, I see you battling with some people, but I don't think you're being as cutthroat in return as people are to you. And maybe I think that is going to have some impact on.
Yeah, I didn't know how to handle criticism this year at all.
I don't know if it's that. I think just people are just assholes. And when you have literally a lot of people are real just nasty people, especially online. Like Sarwark,
for
example,
to respond like angrily if someone.
Of course,
that
of
way,
course. Yeah. When I met Nick in person, he even said to me, "He's like, I'm much nicer when I'm in person," and I agree.
That is true.
He really is. I can hang out with him, you know, but that doesn't mean I agree with his approach on stuff. I mean, but the point is, I think Joshua's, all I'm saying is you're really making a lot of headway, whether you are feeling that as much yourself. I just wanted to give you a third party kind of feedback.
Well, I appreciate it. We can continue with these, these nice kind of
compliments.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, I do want to ask, I have one more question for Michael from Bobby. He wants to know, what is the biggest win for the 10th Amendment in the last year? And then depending on your answer, I have something else I want to ask you about, but we'll see what you say.
In the past year,
man, nothing. We have done nothing at all. This has been terrible.
Well, it's hard. We're in the middle of putting together our annual State of the Nullification Movement report for 2019. We published it sometime around January through March. And I'm just trying to think of if there's one that stands out. I guess
you can
find
that at nullifyforwhitesupremacy.org.
The short version is we're basically active as an organization in all the states, less in some. But we had 80 some bills get signed into law. advancing things, take undermining prohibition, advancing the right to keep and bear arms, decriminalizing firearms, sound suppressors in Arkansas, rejecting FDA restrictions in North Carolina, allowing raw milk sales in Vermont, even creating a process to reject federalization of police in Maryland, like all kinds of really interesting stuff happens. A lot of it, I think, is kind of just small pieces of the puzzle. And I would say if we're going to talk about like one big thing is 10 years ago, 12 years ago, when we started doing this, the number was zero. So we're really making some inroads on an issue by issue basis, like we were talking about a little bit before.
One thing I'm kind of curious about, and this isn't necessarily all about federal nullification, but it certainly can turn into that depending on how things go out, is the situation in Virginia where that legislator, they haven't officially passed these laws yet, but they're threatening to and are about to pass these laws that are very, very restrictive on gun ownership. And in response, many, many counties and states in Virginia have sort of declared themselves sanctuary cities for the Second Amendment and formed militias. And it's, we don't have time to go into the whole thing now. It's been talked about in several episodes on Felony Friday and Electric Liberty Land. All of our shows here have discussed this in some way, shape, or form. But I'm curious if you see that as being a strategy that can be effective against future or even current federal gun laws. Is that something that can actually work?
Well, they're actually doing it totally wrong.
Listen for some advice then now.
Well, I've been trying real hard. The only ones who seem to be listening is Gun Owners of America. I've had some conversation with them over the years. Mind you, I've been advocating for gun rights sanctuaries since about 2009 when I spoke at the 25th Annual Gun Rights Policy Conference, which was held in San Francisco, basically recommending at least at that time that gun rights owners follow the strategy of the pot advocates, noticing that in so many states at the time that marijuana was still illegal on a federal level, that if you wanted to defy them, you're going to have to disobey them. I didn't use the term sanctuary for a few years, but certainly have been advocating that for a long time. But what's going on in Virginia, although there are about 95 to 100 localities that are claiming to be Second Amendment sanctuaries, which I think is a bad term for many reasons. If you want to know, we can talk about that. But there are 95 to 100 that are claiming that, and the number that are actually Second Amendment sanctuaries are zero. Not one single one has done anything to protect the right to keep and bear arms. I personally believe that most of the people that are actually doing this, not the grassroots, who I think many are being misled, some are not, but the politicians, the elected sheriffs in most of these places, they're just politically grandstanding. They're setting up a situation where they can get a court case at best. I wrote an article for the Mises Institute maybe a couple of months ago that was called Second Amendment Sanctuaries, Rhetoric Versus Reality, that I think explains in a little bit of detail what's going on, not just in Virginia, but in various states where they're trying to implement these sanctuaries. Really, we're talking about some kind of nullification, really, if you really want to do something. And the short version is the strategies that we have been advocating for people to use for a long time regarding the federal government. A lot of people are trying to use those same strategies against the state government. But in law, the relationship of a state to the federal government is different than a city to a state, and it doesn't actually work. So they're going to have a real hard time. What it's going to get down to is that people are going to literally, the only way they're going to pull this off, they're going to literally have to refuse to comply with the law. Like the New York SAFE Act, the last time I saw a statistic, I think was 2016, there was about a 4% compliance rate. I'm sure it's higher now, but you really have to have a non-compliance in large numbers to be able to do this. They're not just going to be able to pass resolutions. The resolutions that they're passing in Virginia and everywhere else, they are non-binding political statements. They have no effect of law. I've actually compared them, and you can see in that Mises article, if you link it, the Mises article, I compare a sanctuary.
I'll link it.
I will. A sanctuary city like the San Francisco City and County of Refuge Ordinance that was passed in the late 80s, the San Francisco Sanctuary City Law, if you compare that with a resolution passed in Virginia, the differences are very stark. One does something, the other one does nothing.
Yeah, resolutions have no teeth. There's literally
they do nothing.
Yeah,
I mean, you can be important if you can. So I think there is potential. I don't want to like totally poo-poo on it. I just don't like politicians, obviously. I think resolutions can be very important. Mind you, my organization promotes the Kentucky and Virginia resolutions of 1798 as two of the most important documents in American history. And those are non-binding resolutions that just talk about the principles of nullification. So non-binding political statement resolutions are very important when used in an honest way. If they were being advertised as we want to take a stand instead of making the claim that they're sanctuaries, confusing people into thinking that they're like immigration sanctuary cities when they're not, I think they can be very effective. But if the general public is being misled, and I think in many ways they are, then when they have to do something else, I think a lot of people are going to be like, well, I thought you already declared this was a Second Amendment sanctuary.
Right.
We have to pass something else. I got to disobey the law. What are you talking about? Right. It's going to create a lot of problems.
There's no legal change from these resolutions.
Nothing. Nothing.
Right. Which can lead to a tricky situation if the public thinks otherwise.
Yep.
Very tricky.
All right. Well, Bolden, I know you only need to promote 10thAmendmentCenter.org. Is it .org? .com?
.com.
See, I can't
spelled
even
spelled out.
Write. Yeah, I'm professional. Josh, so before we let you go, Josh, I want to let you give, of course, your final pitch. It won't be your final pitch because I'll host some debates as we get a little closer to convention. But final pitch on why anybody listening should look into your campaign for LNC chair, or if they're not even involved in the party, why they should be, except for Bolden, who has reasons that he's stated previously.
Well, I think we've given plenty of reasons why you should be involved with the party. It's the one party since its inception in the 1970s that has stayed principled on things like the anti-war and self-defense and the right to marry, and all of these principles, they've stayed pretty much the same in this party since 1971. So it's a good party to be a part of if you want a party that's not the two old parties, that's not a party that's gonna twist and turn and leave you thinking, what the hell did I just become a part of? So you may have to deal with a little bit of libertarian infighting, but that's all right. We all do. And as far as delegates that want to vote for me, I just really hope that you guys will see that I put in the work and I have shown that what I talked about in 2018 works. And I would like the opportunity to do that on a grander scale. So,
well, gentlemen, it's been an absolute pleasure having both of you guys here today.
Bonus segment.
I am down. I know Josh might have to go. I've got some more.
I think he's got like 10 minutes.
Maybe we can at least. How about this? We'll sign off right now. We'll sign off the main show, and then we'll start a bonus segment for as long as Josh can stay on, and then we'll see. Because I don't want to be one-on-one Bolden. That sounds scary.
No, that's boring.
It's going to get all weird.
All right, guys. Thank you guys so much for joining me today.
Thank you.
Awesome time. Until next time, my friends. Live long!
And live free.